Hey everyone, this is Mark Bonner and you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, brought to you in partnership with Shout. Shout is a free, confidential, 24/7 text messaging support service for anyone struggling to cope. If life ever feels like it's getting too much, you can anonymously text 85258 anytime, day or night, and speak to a trained volunteer for mental health support. Enjoy the pod.
Hello everyone, welcome along to the first regular Under the Abbey Stand pod of the 22-23 season, or should I say, the first pod in the year of the Nibbler. Joining me, Julian Roberts, to talk about almost exclusively Harvey Nibs for the next half an hour or so is Tom Walker. Tom, we're back, football's back. How's your day down at the Abbey yesterday?
Yeah, delightful. Good to be back. Good to have a nearly packed Abbey Stadium. And yeah, good start. Good way to kick things off, as you say, year of the Nibbler.
I think we made that very clear, haven't we?
I think I said those four words yesterday about 3,000 times, particularly between leaving the Abbey and arriving at the watering hole that we frequent after games.
It was brilliant. Like every time we took a touch or did anything in that sort of second half, we'd sort of look at each other and go, "Year of the Nibbler, boys. Year of the Nibbler." It was great. Proper great atmosphere down there as well. It had proper sort of first game of the season, really good vibes to it. It's gone right up there with one of my favourite first games of the season, I reckon.
Yeah, I reckon so. I think a big part of it is obviously the opposition that we played. MK, I don't think they're like the outright favourites to win the league or get promoted, but they're certainly sort of in and amongst it. And obviously, clearly, it's a team that we've struggled against in the sort of meetings we've had. Obviously, we put a small but important dent in the aggregate scoreline that we had going into it.
What does that make it? 12-2 now?
Yeah, we're getting there.
Slowly.
Slowly but surely. Easy does it. I think the game that we had at the Abbey against them last season, we weren't miles off, but you could tell that they just had a bit more of like an edge than we did. And you felt like, although we've competed with that sort of team, I think mostly pretty well, obviously a couple of notable examples where maybe things went a little bit tits up, particularly away from home against that sort of team last season. But you just kind of felt that was the next kind of step was to not just kind of come out of it and be like, oh yeah, you know, like we played well and we give a good account of ourselves against better opposition, frankly, but you never really went into them with any sort of expectation that you'd get something. Whereas I think yesterday, pretty much everyone that we talked to before was pretty confident that we'd get something and could take something from it. Obviously, look, there's no point hiding the fact that it's a really good time to play MK Dons. It's the first competitive game they've played since losing probably their two best players from last season, obviously Twine and our very own Harry Darling. And I think they had 9 debutants yesterday.
Yeah.
That's a big stat, right?
It is something we said before, that if you're going to have to play these teams at some point in the season, it's not bad to play in first game of the season. Like you said, when there's a lot of turnover, you're losing two of your most important players from the campaign before. There's also the mental side of getting yourself, if you're MK or someone like MK, a long season like that, they were so good and they finished third. And then lost in the playoffs, obviously lost to Wickham in the semi-finals. It's hard to then get yourself back up for a new season straight away. I think it takes a moment for them to get into their groove. We'll come on to Oxford later on as well. And I think it could be not a bad time to play them as well. It is worth mentioning, it is just me and you today. The rest of the pod are busy sort of procreating, having kids. Well, not Swindle. I mean, he's just hungover, I think. Something that George said before the game was what you were saying there, Tom, that it does feel like it was a good time to play them. And looking at specific aspects of yesterday's performance, there's only really one place to start, isn't there? For you, Tom, how impressive was Harvey Nibs yesterday?
Yeah, really good. But obviously, I think you know, clearly as a football club, we've seen progression like probably we've not seen before, really, I guess, other than the sort of early 90s over the last sort of 3 years. And I think for the most part, a lot of those players have just kind of grown and got better and as kind of time's gone on. But Nibs now, like his progression over the last, probably not even the last like 6 months, probably since like, you know, obviously, you know, discounting the sort of off season, you're probably talking like a period of like, maybe like 8 to 10 games of him going from being like realistically pretty peripheral to being like an essential part of the team. You know, at the end of last season, we saw him play well away at Ipswich and obviously Wigan, where he scored a very, very similar goal to the one against MK on Saturday. And I guess the challenge was how, you know, can he kind of pick it up and take it into the new season when the pressure's on, so to speak. And he was really good. Did the things that, you know, we kind of expect from Harvey Nibs and we have expected from him since he joined the club, really, which is showing the energy, the sort of willingness to kind of chase, you know, what you might think is a lost cause. But in that sort of period of time that I mentioned, he's really started to add genuine like quality and be able to show it, you know, pretty consistently, really. And you know, I think that's really been the kind of, you know, if any, like the criticism that we probably had of him, is that he's just until relatively recently, he's been pretty raw. But I think, you kind of got to take into consideration as well, like the sort of level of experience he's got, like it's like 4 years that he's been in, been on our books as a professional footballer, but half of that was a season that was written off. And he sort of played second fiddle to two brilliant strikers in the promotion season, and then, you know, in and out of the team for last season. So this really is his first crack at being like a integral part of a first 11 going into a season. And really good way to kick that off. And as you say, first day on the calendar of the year of the Nibbler ticked off.
We had a few questions from James and Romsey Amber just asking what year is it. And when I woke up this morning and I saw that, it just sort of confused me for a second. But then I remember, obviously, it is the year of the Nibbler. I think you make a great point there about Nibs adding different elements to his game, because something I think in years gone by, you would never level a criticism against him of lacking desire or willingness to run, or he's always been a very lively player, right? And he's always had miles in his legs in terms of, like you said, chasing down lost causes and harrying defenders and hassling defenders and that sort of thing. I suppose when he used to play as a sort of poacher, right? Like there was, you know, an element sort of in the pre-Bonner days, he was essentially just like a poacher, right? He'd always had a bit of a goal scoring instinct about him. But the thing you'd maybe level against him is maybe he didn't quite have that perfect touch or that technique. But I think you've only got to look at his goal yesterday to see that that is definitely something that he's adding to his game. And it is important to look at the transformation, not just in, I suppose, him as a player and his qualities, but he's also doing it in what I assume for him was a completely new position up until about 6 months ago, right?
Yeah. It seems kind of a little bit unconventional to have a player like Nibs playing in that position. You kind of feel like that sort of number 10 role is kind of created for, you know, a player like Wes, for example, who has, you know, obviously had a lot of qualities that we maybe don't need to go into right now. But, you know, that sort of player that maybe is a little bit more traditionally creative, if you like.
Yeah.
But I think like tactically, like it's an interesting one, and again, like it goes back to the, you know, basic Mark Bonner's decision making, and that's been, you know, obviously the theme of the sort of last few years that we've had. But I think it's a really good option because he's quite good at linking things, so, you know, sort of sits well in that. A bit sort of between the midfield and obviously Joe Ironside. But I think as well as that, like in the way that we play the game, particularly in the second half against MK, a lot of it was kind of on the break, you know, soaking up pressure and sort of trying to hit them on the break. And when we have Harvey Nibs on the pitch, he can also just join as like almost like a second striker when we're doing that. You know, he's obviously on the legs and the energy to kind of get up the pitch and, you know, not just play sort of behind the striker, but also play alongside Joe as well. And that's basically a quality that, you know, like a Lancaster, for example, or obviously going back to last season before Wes, maybe couldn't do. So that's like an extra, an extra touch that, you know, that he brings and, you know, there's good competition in that part of the pitch, you know, like we'll come on to, I'm sure, a bit later. But, you know, that does give him the edge over maybe a few of the people he's competing with. So, it's a new role. It's impressive how well he's adapted to it. I'm sure it's not completely alien to him. He's just playing a little bit deeper than he would have done normally. But, his progression now has been just, like I said earlier, like I think for the most part, it's been relatively steady, but his is just like taking off. It seems phenomenal. It's quite literally like game on game. You're kind of like, wow, like he's just kicking onto like new levels virtually every time you see him play. Hopefully more of the same.
Yeah. And let's come on to that sort of discussion about the other options in that position now, because he is slowly, like I said, game on game, sort of making it his own. His performances are making him, I don't know, from an outsider's perspective, like fairly undroppable at this stage. But we had a question from Stephen saying, how does Lancaster fit in more as a backup for Nibs or a playmaker to change the direction of games? So I wondered, like, do you think we're going to see Nibs start in the 10 more often than not? Or do you think he might switch up depending on the opposition? Maybe there are certain games that call for that more traditional number 10 sort of role, maybe when we have a bit more of the ball. So you want someone maybe with a slight technical advantage over Nibs. I hope that's not being harsh on Nibs, but I think you see my point. Someone like a Lancaster whose biggest strength, as you mentioned earlier, someone like Wes as well, is their creative abilities and their playmaking abilities. So do you think there'll be a bit of a switching around depending on the opposition between Lancaster and Nibs, or do you think it's actually just Nibs' position to lose?
Well, yeah, I mean, at the moment, it's got to be Nibs' position to lose, I think. It would be very harsh for him not to be, you know, basically one of the first names on the team sheet at the moment. And, you know, the only reason I could see him playing and not playing in that role is if we maybe change shape or change formation. But, you know, we've got a pretty set way of playing. It seems to work. So I don't really see that happening. Lancaster's, I think, it's kind of been a bit unfortunate, really, because, you know, throughout all of last season, it was injury. And now this season, well, I think most people thought, right, with a good preseason behind him, I'll kick on and maybe go to another level. And it's coincided with Harvey Nibs taking off in this way. So if it's not injuries letting him down, it's you know, I guess in a positive way, it's the strength of the people around him. But I think, you know, ultimately he brings a different quality that, you know, I think frankly Nibs just doesn't, and that's the ability to like unpick a defence. Obviously, it's been flashes because, you know, like we just mentioned, he's obviously spent a lot of time out injured or sort of just unavailable for, you know, sort of whatever reason. But in the flashes that we have seen, I think back to Cheltenham away last season, he played one pass, I think, set up the fourth or the fifth goal that sort of just cut through the lines completely. And clearly, like, the amount of games where we're going to have to do that and the onus is on us to unpick a defence rather than, you know, to play like we did for large parts of the MK game, which was soaking up pressure and sort of, you know, trying to kind of sting them on the counter or sort of when we do have moments of kind of having the ball, they're going to be a lot less frequent than games like MK where we're playing against opposition that would expect to beat us, or certainly we would be expected to be, you know, not necessarily like controlling the game. You're talking like probably the home games against maybe like the promoted teams, you know, the teams that are sort of favourites for relegation and maybe away from home there as well. Or you're talking late on in games when you're chasing the goal and you need something a little bit different. You know, we can talk about that until the cows come home basically. But if Harvey Nibs keeps playing as well as he has, fundamentally, there's just no way back in for Jack Lancaster at the moment. And, you know, frustrating as that is for him, for us as fans, it's a perfect situation.
Yeah, it's not a bad situation for Bonner to be in as well, isn't it? And I think later on we're going to come into strength and depth, and that being something that looks like we've I suppose, addressed this year or something we've definitely improved upon this year. So let's just park Nibs for a second. I think we'll talk a lot more about him in the coming weeks if he puts in 10 out of 10 performances like that again. Let's move to the other end of the pitch. Two players who I thought were phenomenal yesterday. And, you know, keeping a clean sheet against a side like MK, you're sort of expecting you're going to have some pretty outstanding performances defensively. But Lloyd Jones and Jibril Okadina yesterday, in sort of different ways, I thought Jones was brilliant at doing a lot of what we see him do, just that sort of brave defending, really sticking his head in where it hurts. And we saw some flashes of quality as well. That little twirl to get past one of the centre mids at one stage. It's pretty out of character of him. But then Jibril Okadina as well. Let's just have a word on him. I mean, his 3-year deal is arguably one of the best bits of news from the whole summer. And yesterday he just showed how important a player he's going to be, not just for us, but also in going forward over the next couple of years as well.
Yeah, I'll caveat that by suggesting that I think it's quite unlikely that at this rate he'll see out that contract.
Yeah,
young centre back, improving very quickly, good experience at League One level. That'll be ringing the bells of a lot of teams in sort of divisions above us, I think.
We've said before that we're sure he'll play Premier League football one day.
Yeah, I think you know, literally ever since he signed on loan, you know, in the second part of that promotion season, I think the one thing that we were, you know, I think as a collective, like, kind of taken aback by was just how calm he was on the ball and just sort of composed. And I think, like, our squad for the most part is a good, competent League One team, you know, particularly the first probably 15 pros. I think, you know, you'd back them to be able to sort of compete at this level relatively comfortably. But I think those two, in particular, I think in terms of a defensive partnership, I'd back them against any centre back pairing in the league. Which maybe is a large statement to make. And we'll see how that goes at Oxford on Saturday, where we'll shot 4 goals last season. But I mean,
6-0 at Oxford, it might be a different couple of howlers. Yeah. That's a different discussion.
I'll dip out the pod. I think the other thing is like individually, they're obviously both very good players, and you know, we've talked a lot about Okadina and you know, where we see his career heading. I'd be astounded if he's not at least playing Championship football this time next year. And I was amazed that we managed to tie him down to another few years. I guess the conversation has been, we'll keep progressing you, and if someone comes in, then we'll not stand in your way. But you know, obviously that's a conversation to address maybe a little bit later on. But I think the thing that is so pleasing for me is how well they complement each other. You know, you've just mentioned about the way that Lloyd Jones plays and this sort of brave defending. He's very much, you know,
he's almost more of a classic lower league centre half. I don't mean to, do you know what I mean? Bit of a stereotype of like a lower league centre half, or that's maybe where his best qualities are.
Yeah, and obviously, like, physically, he's probably a lot more he's probably a lot more imposing than Okadina is, but. Like in situations like, you know, the MK game, played out absolutely perfectly for someone like Jabrilkis. Years gone by and sort of other players, you know, with similar levels of experience who maybe don't have that sort of mentality that he's got to be sort of so calm and collected. Like you make mistakes in those sorts of situations, or you just do the wrong thing and you give away a cheap goal or something like that. But so you've got one who's like really quite like, brutally sort of dominant, and the other one who can just kind of, you know, sort of compose things at the back as well. It does make for quite a good back line. I can imagine, you know, for Mitov, who again we'll come on to, didn't have a huge amount to do realistically. It must be so good to have those two ahead of him, because that probably makes his job a hell of a lot easier. But I think those two, we're onto a winner with those two, because you know, I think Okadina, probably rightly so, is the one that takes all the headlines, because he's going to just shoot up, I over the next few years. I've got no doubts about that. But maybe Jones goes under the radar a little bit with his quality as well. But yeah, really good, you know, against MK. And you know, as much as it's the year of the nibbler,
Of Jumbrin as well.
Yeah, we wouldn't be half the team that we are without those two.
Absolutely. Yeah, that rapport, you're really starting to see it come through, and I think it's going to be huge for us this season. Something that's been mentioned a couple of times, specifically about yesterday's game against MK, was the quality of Bonner's game management, or the way he used subs and the way we sucked up pressure in different ways, as you mentioned earlier, to try and sting on the break in that last sort of quarter of the game. I mean, I'd argue it's sort of as good as we've seen under Bonner, because this is a team that scored 78 goals last year, right? They finished third in the league by a really small margin. Went right to the last day, I think, from my memory. They had zero shots on target yesterday. So that says a lot to me about, you know, the way we're defending, and especially the way we've defended the game late on, using Liam O'Neill as that sort of, you know, that late sub to shore up the midfield and see the game out. Is that an element that's really pleasing to you? Because let's be honest, yeah, if they had scored a late goal, a point would have still been a decent result, right? Like before the game, you probably would have taken a point against a side like that, personally.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, we saw the game out so competently. I never really felt that worried.
Yeah. You know what it reminded me a lot of? It reminded me a lot of the Bolton game.
Yeah, that's a shout. Yeah,
at the start of last season, it was really similar in like the way that we get a goal, sort of get our noses ahead, sort of fairly well, relatively early on. And for the rest of the game, like while you're watching it, you kind of feel like, wow, we're really under the cosh here. Like they could score at any moment. But I remember after that game, it was kind of the similar sort of discussion, you know, that we had. It was just like, well, yeah, they had a lot of possession. They passed it around sort of between the midfield quite nicely. But when push comes to shove, like Dimitar Mitov could have been sat on the deck chair, and really, realistically, it would have been a similar outcome. I mean, they probably would have had a few more shots on goal if
if he was sat on the deck chair. Yeah.
That was the case, but may want to try out later on in the season, one mistake. But yeah, I think I think that is an aspect that, you know, was pleasing. Doing it through subs is not necessarily something that we've seen Bonner do a huge amount of. I would argue, you know, that's been again like a recurring theme, a discussion we seem to have had on a few occasions about, you know, maybe not making subs when we feel maybe they could do. But and normally he's managed games through tactical tweaks and just sort of managing the game literally rather than in terms of
just shouting, and concentrate from the sidelines and stuff like that.
Yeah, just shouting, don't concede.
Don't concede, lads.
clever. But yeah, I think, O'Neill bringing him on, that's, you know, that's a good option to have. You know, we talked a lot of times about the qualities that he brings, but as well as that Houndstrip, I guess a lot of people would have been a little surprised at the start of the game. I was, to be honest.
I was pretty surprised. Yeah,
you know, to have an option like that to bring on, you know, maybe when you feel that, you know, you could just do that a bit more energy, because again, like in situations like that, you need to be at the top of concentration, and if you're like physically tired, that's going to lead to mistakes and slip ups and stuff. So to have options like that to bring on a good, you know, clearly Bonner deserves a lot of credit for managing the game in that way, but I think as much credit should go to the way that the squad's been built to actually do that, because roll the clock back 12 months, we didn't have that option. And now we do. And you know, we can't say what would happen if we didn't make those subs. But I'm confident that across a 46 game season, having those options is going to win us maybe another 5-10 points. And that's, you know, the difference between staying up or going down, or I guess in our case, winning the league or finishing second. We'll see what happens.
Or just how quickly we reach the Premier League, I suppose. Before actually, because I do want to talk about those some new transfers and a bit of that strength and depth that you mentioned in there, which is obviously a huge thing that I think sort of needs talking about here. What I do want to mention, though, this is courtesy of Matt Gooding. Of the 11 players that started yesterday, 7 of them were from our League 2 days. And 8, if you actually include Smith, obviously from a different squad, not the promotion squad. Do you think, Tom, that actually our biggest strength is our continuity and the amount of this squad, plus obviously, you know, management that's been kept together? Stephen asked on these lines, he said, what do you imagine the thinking was in starting Dunk ahead of Houndstrup? And to me, it probably just is that continuity, right? It's trying to keep as much of that squad that was playing so well at the end of last season together. But then there was obviously more options on the bench to change games if needed.
Yeah, I think you know, kind of particularly in terms of the sort of dunk or Houndstrup question, that's just got to go down to the way that Harrison was playing at the end of last season. Well, throughout last season. You know, I guess, you know, you kind of naturally expect when you sign a left back who, you know, is touted as the Iredale replacement, you kind of expect that they'll be straight in as kind of first choice. But I guess there's two things to take into account that, you know, we talked about it at the end of last season, but we weren't really replacing Iredale as such because he didn't play left back a lot of last season. And the person that did play left back, Harrison Dunk, was, for the most part, like really, really good and really, really capable. So I think, you know, I still think that, you know, probably come the end of the season, Houndstrup will be our first choice left back. I'll be relatively confident of that. But I guess it's the decision to start Dunk, I guess, is taken on the fact that you don't just drop someone who's been playing so well and such a big part in a really decent team. So that's probably that one. But yeah, I think in terms of continuity, I think it's something that in the kind of age of social media and sort of transfer announcement videos, I think people get a bit shaky if you don't do loads of business, you don't bring in loads of new faces, which I think is understandable because, like, you know, you look at MK Dons, for example, like they've made like I said, nine debutants on Saturday. And you see like the impact that has. Couldn't quite get it going, like looked good for the most part, I guess expecting MK Dons team to do, but there's no familiarity there. And I think particularly probably continuity was more important for us probably coming into last season rather than this season. You know, it's obviously still a bonus, but Bonner, I think, is in every sense like a really like pure sort of coach. Like he'll take what he's got and he'll just develop them and he'll just get them better. I think it's mentioned in George's interview with obviously the Oxford fan that we'll obviously play a little bit later on. But Bonner's ability to make this team and this group more than the sum of its parts has got to be, for me, his biggest asset and probably the most impressive thing, really. You know, forget the achievements of promotion and all that sort of stuff. Like, just to take a squad of players and make them better than what they probably should be on paper, that's what's kind of got us here. But that comes from continuity, I think.
It's also incredibly exciting, though, isn't it? Like, just the way you were talking about it there. Like, we'll come on to some new signings in just a second. But, you know, for example, someone like one of those new signings, Fajiri or Kenabire, who we, I think, sewed up on Thursday, Friday, I can't remember, end of last week. He's got a track record of scoring goals at this level, right? For Shrewsbury and Doncaster. Seems like a really, really, really decent signing, especially as an option. We've got him on a one-year deal, which seems smart because obviously he's got potential, but he's had injury worries. He spent all of last season. I don't think he played a minute for Doncaster last season. But then you're taking a player there and then you're adding him to, you know, a coaching staff and a squad with a manager who has a proven track record of giving players a higher ceiling than you might expect them to have. It just makes me so excited to think of players who are already good enough for this level, right? Or on paper have already shown that they're good enough for this level and see what Bonner can do with them. Like Okadina as well, like we were saying earlier.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about the open top bus parade right now. we were talking about on the way to the game. We were watching it on repeat. There's a 3 minute and 25 second YouTube video of his goals
in the
last 3 years. And there's nothing that's convinced me of a player's quality, just like that video.
On the basis of that, he is world-class. So it's exciting to see what he's going to do with a genuine mercurial talent like that.
Yeah. I'll have to see him play and I'm sure that there'll be more clips, somewhere available, but that video does also suggest to me that he scores with 100% of his touches.
he's got a pretty elite conversion rate.
I think again, like as an option to have someone like that, I mean, you know, you can never really tell how the season's going to play out and what sort of role he's going to have in the team, but at the moment right now he is an option and he will be you know, with Janna fighting to try and get into the first 11. That's really, really decent business. And I know people will talk about injuries and stuff like that, but I remember when, like, we signed Iredale, I think he was coming off the back of two ACL injuries. Like, I kind of just feel confident in every department of the football club at the moment that if they bring in someone who's had injuries, like, they're not just going to break down with us. Years gone by, like, you kind of felt like we were signing players, like, you remember, like, Samir Carruthers, who had, like, a history of injuries, and you just kind of felt like he's just going to come in and just be injured, like, all the time. But I just have the impression, and this, you know, as much of it is about what Mark Bonner's done, as managers, that you bring players in with maybe a point to prove or have a bit of a question mark over them, and he just takes them to the next level and just kind of really, you know, allows them to kind of fulfill that potential. Like, you go back to, like, Paul Mullen, for example, he'd never scored double figures in a season. But, you know, fast forward a year, he's playing in the conference, but it is what it is. But yeah, I think I think in terms of what kind of Beare and, you know, Janna as well, who we'll talk about.
Oh, yeah. I've been waiting to talk about this.
Yeah,
Have you ever seen a 5-minute debut as exciting as that? Have you ever seen a first touch on a debut like that, like at any level on TV anywhere?
It was so exciting. It was like Obviously, the NRE that we frequent is obviously a terrace, but for the guys in the main stand, it was proper, like, gets you off your seat stuff. There was that moment when he took it around one person, sort of rode the challenge, and took it around another, and you're thinking, like, whoa, here we go.
Someone who was standing in front of us just turned around and went, well, he's world class. And that was, it's correct. Go on.
He's someone that, you know, we've been linked with on a few occasions. It's obvious that Ben Strang's had his eye on Janna for, you know, a few years, and, you know, because he's not had much football at, you know, sort of in the football league. I think he had a loan spell at Torquay and you know, one at Newport that didn't go, you know, completely to plan. But they know what they're expecting, because that's their job, right? They scout them, they watch them thoroughly, they see what they can do and what they can bring. But for us as fans, it's, you know, you're always a little bit like, I wonder what this guy's going to be like. Like, what can he add? What can he bring?
Yeah.
And when you sign a centre forward who, you know, we've tracked and tracked and tracked and been linked with time after time, you think, like, there's got to be something in this guy. So for him to come on and do that straight away and look that exciting and that sort of explosive on his first start for us is, really reassuring and really exciting. And again, like, we probably said the word options about 3 million times.
Yeah.
But it's just another option. And it's perfect for the way that we play because, you know, like we've alluded to a lot, you know, particularly in games against the sort of favourites or the top teams or the ones with the massive budgets and stuff like that. You know, we're going to need players like that who can get us up the pitch and who can, you know, break and counter effectively. And we're seeing that in perfect example, just relieves pressure. But not only that, like, it completely swings the momentum of the game when something like that happens, because it just kind of gets, especially at home, because it just kind of gets the crowd up. Like, I mean, the NRE, it was like, it went mental. Like, it went
within 2 minutes, he was like getting the crowd going, getting the NRE going. It's like 2 minutes of his debut, and you're seeing out a 1-0, you're seeing out of, you know, you're 1-0 up against one of the best sides in the league with a couple of minutes to go.
Yeah, but and I mean, like, you know, as good as it is to just, like, relieve that moment of pressure.
Yeah.
Imagine you're away from home trying to chase a game, and you think, right, we're knocking on the door, we're banging on the door. You know, we're really, like, hammering away to try and get that equaliser. And then fast forward, like, 30 seconds, and the whole place is just, like, the whole atmosphere around the game is completely changed.
Yeah. Do you know what it's sort of reminds me a little bit of is, do you remember the way Southgate was using Grealish during the Euros?
Yeah.
How when as soon as you start warming up, you'd feel the atmosphere in the stadium change, and you'd feel everyone, that little, it raises that excitement, not only in the crowd, but then also it must have then a reflection on the players chasing a game or trying to break an opposition down.
Yeah. If he puts in 90-minute performances and you extrapolate that across the whole thing, it's going to be pretty exciting.
Let's ask a question, just this sort of to wrap up this part. Nathan's asked, will Janna steal Brophy's starting position? He says the man had the MK Dons defence on ice. He's not wrong, to be fair. But I sort of want to like couple that with another question we had from James, which was, after Big Joe was subbed with 20 minutes to go, coupled with the signing of a new striker on Friday, Fajiri, do you think Bonner is trying to decrease our reliance on Big Joe, or is it just a more evolved plan B going to a pacey counter-attacking team? I'll also add Jane in as, wheezing the word again, option, into that question. And it sort of comes back to the Nibs and Lancaster debate. Do you think it's as James is suggesting, that Bonner is just trying to decrease our reliance on Joey, and sort of figure out different ways of playing where, like, there's this quicker counter-attacking pacier option, like with Jane or even Smith up top?
Yeah, I mean, it seems sensible, right? Like, I mean, Giants side for you know, for all that we love him to pieces, and, you know, for the qualities that he's got, at times you just wonder how he's, like, still together. Like, he's been getting battered for like 90 minutes every week for like 2 years, and he's just like sort of pieced together and like bandaged up here and sort of like headband on there. And we obviously had that period of time, I think it was around like Christmas last year, where Ironside wasn't fit, and you know, in the end we kind of adapted to it, and Smith took on that striker role pretty well, and that was kind of the start of his rise. But it did kind of highlight the fact that we were playing in a way which is good and is effective, but it's heavily reliant on Joe Ironside being fit. That's not a problem, because, like, I think, you know, if you look at any team in the country, if you take out their number one striker, like, they're gonna get weaker, and that's not a concern for me. Like I say, like, you take out Michael Smith out of Sheffield Wednesday, they're gonna get weaker. You take out Scott Twine out of MK Dons, they're gonna get weaker. Mm-hmm. So that's not a problem for me, but, like, the problem is that there wasn't really much of a plan B, and now there is, and that's obviously reassuring. Clearly, we've not seen a huge amount of Fajiri, so we're not sure what type of striker he is. I think Jan is a little different.
I have to say, I'd be surprised if Jana stole Brophy's position, as Nathan's suggesting.
I think, if anything, it's probably more likely to be the other side and take Smith's.
Yeah.
Brophy is just, like, consistent in the team. Mm-hmm. And do you know what? Like, it's good to reduce the reliance on him as well, because it kind of goes to some of those other big players sort of in the squad who, you know, performed so well last season, but, like, they were the 11, or we had like 12 players who you thought, you're confident if they come in, they're going to play well, or they're going to contribute, and they can kind of handle themselves at this level. And, you know, Brophy was basically ever present last season, but if you took him out of that side, you lose such a big, like, you lose such a big part of how we play, and you know, you lose so much of what he brings. So regardless of whether it's like for like, or whether it's kind of a slightly different type of player there, it's just good that we've got that ability to just do things a bit differently. And if, you know, if Brophy does have an injury, or he does get burnt out, which, you know, could happen after playing pretty much every week for an entire season in the way that he plays, he's going to need a rest. He's going to need some time out of the team. And, like, the one we haven't even mentioned yet, Shiloh Tracy.
Yeah, good point.
That's another one. It's just options, mate.
Options. Well, look, we're going to need all of those options, maybe, next week when we travel to the Kassam to face Oxford United. It's a tricky game. I think it'll be a tough one. It was obviously, we lost 4-2 at their place in this fixture last year. To help us preview it, Jord spoke to George Ellick from the Not the Top 20 pod.
Right then, Use fans, it's time for our first fan preview of the season, as we look forward to our first away game of the season. As it's a couple of firsts, we thought we'd try and push the boat out this time and see if there was a special guest or a celebrity guest that we could get associated to Oxford. So I did a Google search. Biggest celebrity fan for Oxford I could find, Timmy Mallett.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he didn't reply to our emails. So instead, I've got the brilliant George Ellick from the Not the Top 20 podcast as plan B.
Did you not try Tim Henman? He often comes up in the Google searches as well.
But, well, do you know what? I'm lying, because Timmy Mallett wasn't top. It was actually like Woody Harrelson. I was like, I think that must be a lie. That must be
wrong. as far as I know.
Maybe he like did a film in Oxford once and someone's put two and two together. But yeah.
Richard Branson's been seen, I mean, in the stadium. As far as I know, the Henman link is purely because his parents lived in Oxfordshire and he went to school there, and actually he couldn't care less about the club. So yeah, Mallett is definitely the one. So if you get Mallett before this goes out, I'm fine for you to cut this all out and give it to Timmy instead.
George, I'm guessing most people that listen to our podcast, which is about a League One football team, probably know about your podcast because you cover League One. But just in case they don't, very quickly, what's your elevator pitch for Not the Top 20?
It's a podcast that we've been doing for about 6 years now, covering the Championship, League One and League Two. So it does exactly what it says on the tin in terms of being Not the Top 20. And yeah, it's kind of grown probably beyond what we thought it would, and has kind of enabled us to work on the coverage of the EFL on Sky and BBC and the highlight show as well. So definitely do check it out. And we're very aware that quite often football fans, even in the EFL, will support their team, in this case Cambridge, and then probably only watch matches today and listen to Premier League podcasts. But if you are interested in what's going on elsewhere in the EFL, do have a listen. We've just released our 1-24s as well, where we go through each league. Last season, we made a really nice prediction of Cambridge in 24th, which...
You preempted where I was going.
I was going to say,
you know, 6 years doing the pod, must be experts now. Remind us what the prediction for Cambridge last season was.
Do you know what? I will stand by it to the extent that I think it shows what an incredible job Mark Bonner did, where I think when you look at everything going into last season, I think thinking that Cambridge were the team most likely to get relegated was a fair assumption based on, you know, the fact that the squad hadn't really been strengthened and, you know, it was such an unexpected promotion in the first place. And it's just testament to the incredible job that Mark Bonner did and the football club and the trajectory it's on as well. And also last season, we ran a competition, as we are doing this season as well, where you know, we bought a season ticket for the fan who did the best review of the pods. And someone did a Cambridge fan did a haiku. So we gave him the
very
the,
Cambridge.
Yeah, we gave him the season ticket, and what a season he had watching it, in fairness, like a young guy who couldn't himself, go out and buy one. So he was there for the whole of the campaign and to watch us and our prediction fall flat on its face.
Yeah, I just think we'll be in big trouble if Bonner leaves this year. I agree. Linchpin. And we were talking off air how there's a dread amongst United fans where everyone last year was tipping us to go down. We stayed up. Now this year, no one's tipping us to go down. Yeah. And that's just kind of made everyone feel really uneasy. Yeah, I mean, I won't ruin your brilliant 1-24 pod, which is excellent. But I will just say to Cambridge fans, the outlook from George and Ali is slightly more positive this year. Any particular reason why you reckon we'll avoid that bottom four?
Well, I think you were very good value for your kind of mid-table finish last season. And I think after that first campaign in League Two, you know, Ali and I we're slaves to the data a little bit. We both pay kind of big attention to the number side of things, and there's no getting away from the fact that in the promotion season, you know, the underlying data around Cambridge's performances wasn't particularly good, and that kind of flagged up some red flags from our point of view that maybe, you know, Mark Bonner had got fortunate in a season or whatever. And I think any concerns we had about that now are completely gone. I think we can see over the last two seasons that Bonner knows exactly what he's doing. I think it massively plays into Cambridge's hands that he is not an ex-player and he's someone with very close ties to the club. I think if he was an ex-pro with 400 EFL games to his name, it would be much harder to keep him at the club. But I think Championship clubs especially would be hesitant, I think, to go out and recruit him without more games under his belt, which is a massive positive for Cambridge because I think you'll be able to keep hold of him longer as well. So, I think Bonner seems to me to be the manager that you want in the EFL, where he takes players and improves them and he gets teams playing beyond the sum of their parts. And that means that Cambridge, in my opinion, I would say I think it's very, very competitive down the bottom end of League One. There genuinely isn't a single team that Ali and I look at and think they are destined for the drop. Even we had Lincoln 24th in our predictions, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if they were comfortably safe. So it's hard to predict, but I think there's enough positivity around Cambridge for the moment, especially when Mark is there. And it also helps that we've got to know him a bit over the over the season as well, and can call him a mate as well.
He's the only guy I know that wears a jumper during preseason. That's my takeaway from the whole game I watched last weekend. Look, it's a fan preview, and we've spent all this time talking about my team. So let's talk about your team. Again, I don't want to give too much away about your 1 to 24 podcast, which everyone should go and listen to. But you don't have your team, Oxford, in that top six. What was the, you know, how painful was that? And what was your thinking there?
It's funny because we normally do. And in fairness, in two of the last three seasons, we have finished there. But normally, because we normally have Oxford in the top six, I say to Ali, I think you do Oxford, because otherwise we get bias leveled at us. But this season, because we had Oxford outside the top six, I was like, I'll do it this year, because I feel like I need to protect myself from Oxford fans saying, hold on, why have you got them outside the top six and you haven't even said anything about it? There is the window definitely hasn't gone to plan. Where it took us a long time to make any signings of note. Kieran Brown came in early in the window, but he was with us on loan last season, so it wasn't really a new signing. It was just kind of retaining somebody whose contract had run out, who'd done a decent job. The signings we've made are very different on paper to, I think Oxford have built a reputation over the last couple of years to be one of the best recruitment teams in terms of going out, buying cheap and selling high. And that has been the model. For those who don't know, the Oxford Stadium is still owned by Firoz Kassam. The rent that he is able to charge the football club is fairly crippling. Mm-hmm. And it means in order to basically stay afloat, just with FFP and everything else, so Oxford cannot, even with a very, very rich, a very wealthy board, Oxford cannot reinvest that money. So the money that we've got this summer for example, Luke McNally for 2 million, for Rob Atkinson around 1.5 million the year before that, all of this money just goes into levelling off what we have to pay for rent. So, but this season, it seems to have shifted a bit where we've gone out and signed Yannick Wiltshire, who is a 30-year-old winger we bought on a two-year deal, which is not very like us. We've gone out and got Josh Murphy in, who I think must be the highest paid player that Oxford have had ever, I would assume, given what he was on at Cardiff. And, Cardiff bought him for £11 million in the Premier League. So, and whilst these are obviously good signings on paper, they're high-risk signings where you're getting guys who are not necessarily those up-and-coming players who there's a reason why they're dropping down into League One. They're at an age as well and at a cost point where if things don't work out, the flip side is actually quite negative. At the time of recording, I've had to deal with the news this morning that Cameron Brannigan is set to move to Blackpool, which is a huge blow that I don't think anybody at Oxford necessarily saw coming. So it's all a bit up in the air. There have been some decent signings as well. I think Stuart Findlay in from the MLS, from Philadelphia, a left-footed 26-year-old centre-back who played for Scotland. He's played and scored for Scotland when he was last playing in the UK when he was at Kilmarnock. That is the kind of innovative, clever bit of business that Oxford have become very good at. And I think he is probably a championship player who's moved to the division. And he said the reason he's done it is because he wants to play for Scotland. So there are positives still. Carl Robinson is a very safe pair of hands, no matter what anybody thinks of him. He is someone who gets teams playing attacking football and he wins a lot of games by doing so. But I think until we see more, we need a right back, we need a left back, we need a holding midfielder, we need a centre midfielder now Brannigan's gone, we need a striker to challenge Matty Taylor. There are way too many holes in the team and the squad at the moment to have a positive prediction. The only caveat to that is I'm pretty sure the budget is higher. And I think the financial outlay that we will see between now and the end of August is going to be high by any level. So for that reason, maybe Cambridge's visit to Oxford is coming at quite a good time for you guys.
I was going to ask about Brannigan because my sort of next questions were going to be, formation and key men, and then sort of saw that news on Twitter earlier. We'll come to those questions definitely, but what impact is his departure going to have on the starting 11?
Massive. Absolutely massive. He's Oxford's most important player, in my point of view. The good news for Oxford is that it's a release clause that's been met, and he had a year left on his deal. So Oxford are getting, as far as I know, we're getting a seven-figure fee for a guy whose contract's out up in a year. So in business terms, it's not the worst thing. The timing is frustrating. I think there was quite a long, drawn-out transfer saga between Blackpool and Oxford in January, where Oxford were getting very frustrated by Blackpool's total unwillingness to meet the release clause, even though they said that is what you have to play to get him. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if the timing of this bid from Blackpool is strategic off the back of that. But he's, you know, he's the talisman at the club. He is the most important player. His energy and his quality on the ball, I don't think you often get players in their mid-20s with, you know, the pedigree that he's got having come through the Liverpool Academy, the technical ability he's got, coupled with his off-the-ball energy, his pressing ability, penalty taker, goal scorer. I mean, there aren't many players like him, and Blackpool have got themselves an absolute gem, and it's going to be incredibly difficult for the club to replace him in the short amount of time, and it leaves Oxford, you know, notably weaker going into the season.
It's probably worth pointing out that we're recording this before the first Saturday of the season, yeah. So we don't know your
and before the photo has been taken of Cameron holding an yeah. orange shirt. So let's see.
But how are you anticipating the team to line up, sort of formation wise, for the season? Would it be the same as last year, or do you think there's going to be anything different?
Well, weirdly, I mean, Carl Robinson has been a pretty in terms of formation, he's been a you know, he's always plays a four at the back. It's either a variation of a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1. But at the end of last season, we saw him switch to a 3-5-2 because Sam Baldock played up front with Matt Taylor. Baldock is now injured, so I think we're likely to see something more similar to the 4-3-3. But having said that, now that Brannigan's out, it could be more of a 4-2-3-1 with Alex Gorin, who isn't yet back from injury, possibly coming into the side. Marcus McGuane is a player who's played that holding role so far in this preseason, but I'm not convinced that he has the defensive capacity to, you know, he's a ball player, and I think I'd much rather, when you're an attacking side, I think you need that midfield linchpin who enables the fullbacks to bomb on, who can drop into the centre-backs if need be, and I don't think he's necessarily that player. I'm sure it will be a four at the back, but how it's going to look, there are so many holes, it's impossible to say. I think it's quite likely we'll end up having either James Henry or Billy Bowden playing in the midfield three, which is not really their preferred position either. But in wide areas, we are incredibly strong, I would say. Josh Murphy will start. Marcus Brown will start. Those are two players who have the physical attributes and the technical ability to play way, way higher than League One. And we know that in terms of foxes in the box at a League One level, Matty Taylor is pretty much as good as it comes. So it'll be classic Oxford under Carl Robinson, I think. Some defensive instability and plenty of goals and plenty of chances going forward.
And who do you reckon is going to be your match winner when we play each other? Who's the name that United Cambridge fans should be keeping an eye on?
I think it's got to be Murphy. I mean, yeah. I think in terms of what he's done in the past, you know, 4 years ago, he was playing in the Premier League for Cardiff, aged 23. And things have clearly gone wrong for him in his career. You know, I've spoken to a few Norwich fans in the last couple of days who genuinely cannot believe that he will be aged 27 playing League One football. You know, this is a guy who, when he came through the academy there, was seen as being, you know, he was the better twin between him and Jacob, and he was seen as being, you know, the next big hope. The one positive thing for Oxford fans and for Murphy himself is that, you know, let's not kid ourselves here. Josh Murphy was on loan at Preston last season, was sent home early because of issues with his timekeeping and his attitude. You know, yeah. he was playing for a bottom half championship side and was seen surplus to requirements. That is not a particularly good endorsement for a player coming into League One. But the positive thing for him is that when he was at Norwich, he went to MK Dons on loan, I think in 15-16, and he won every single award at MK Dons in that loan spell. That was kind of the loan spell that really made him. And that was under Carl Robinson. So, and you know, for all of his people who detract from Carl, his man management style has a track record of getting the best out of players who've maybe stumbled on hard times for whatever reason. And hopefully Murphy, going back to a manager that he knows already, who's got the best out of him before, should see him get back to that level. Because if, in my opinion, Josh Murphy could either flop for form and fitness and not play much this season, or if he's at the top of his game, I think he could easily be the best player in the league. So hopefully he'll be the one, if we are to win it, who could do that.
Two last questions, please, George. Number one, what's your score prediction?
We're decent at home. I think at this stage, I have to predict us to win a marginal. I think, you know, we've got a, with the amount of money that's been invested in the team, even with the holes, I think we've got 9 days to fill some of those, and I'm sure we will do that. And home games against sides who are at least perceived to be bottom half sides, I'd be doing myself a disservice if I didn't say we'd win, but I don't think it'll be cozy or comfortable at all.
Will it be the goal fest when we were at Oxford last time? Was it 4-2?
Yeah. Brilliant game. It will be. All our games are. I mean, that's the way it goes.
Final question then, most important one, pre-game, Cambridge fans listening to this, what Oxford pub should they be heading to? Please don't say that that bar above the well, cinema, bowling alley, I mean, across the ground.
I will say this till I'm blue in the face. The Oxford Stadium is the worst match day experience of any stadium in the UK. It's the furthest from any train station. It's miles away from the city centre. It is not conducive to getting home from anyone. The car park is too small. So I would just say get a train into Oxford early, book a cab early, yeah, and just pile into one of the nice pubs in town, because there's no point, you know, there aren't any pubs near the stadium, sadly.
Brilliant. George, thank you so much, mate.
Cheers, mate. Thank you. Have a good time. And yeah, we'll speak for the home leg.
There we go. There's George's views. If anyone listening to this podcast doesn't also listen to that podcast, I think, you know, it comes highly, highly recommended from us. They're a brilliant pod. George and Ali really, really know their stuff. Both their Monday review shows and their Thursday betting shows are really worth a listen. And do definitely try and check out their League One 1-24 previews, where I won't spoil it all for you, but I will say that they have significantly improved their outlook on Cambridge United from their 24th place prediction last year, as George mentioned in that interview there. But they're brilliant, and they had Bonner, our very own, at their live show back in May, which I think is available on their feed. So do check that out. And thank you very much, George, for taking the time out to join us. Let's see, Timmy Mallett maybe will be available for the home fixture, but we'll let you know, George. Let's move on to the game itself. I mean, George does a much better job at previewing Oxford than we're going to do. But from your perspective, Tom, one thing that's changed a lot since that interview was recorded, which was a few days ago, is that Cameron Brannigan signed a new deal at Oxford United. A 3-year deal, which obviously for them is huge news. I think George says there how important a player he is for them. Would you say, Tom, he's the one that you're worried about in that Oxford side? Or there's obviously, you know, the eye-catching signings of Josh Murphy and to a lesser extent, maybe Yannick Wiltshire as well.
Yeah, Brannigan was very, very good when we played at the Kassam. What was it, like March time?
About March, yeah.
Yeah, he obviously scored twice. He's that type of midfield player that just kind of very like dynamic, gets into the right positions, and does have an eye for goal. So yeah, he's, you know, particularly because of the news about him staying, you imagine there's going to be a real feel good factor around him at the moment, at Oxford. Yeah, I think immediately he's the one that springs to mind as being quite worrying. But then like you're thinking about like, you know, you're forgetting like Matty Taylor, who's had a good record against us. Basically whenever he's played against us, really. I think he's basically scored every time. So he's, you know, he's another one, you know, that we'll be wary of. Then like you look out wide, they're the options that they've got out wide are very positive. But you know, when we went there to the Kassam, we were beaten by a much better attacking team. When we played there, it was a strange game because it was so open, and you know, Smith obviously had an interesting afternoon. But I'm
center of attention.
Yeah, I'm not convinced we'll get the warmest of welcomes. No. We go on next Saturday, but you know what it did show was that like they are there to be got at, and there was a lot of they had quite a lot of similar games to that last season, I think, where they sort of beat teams by basically just scoring more than them. You know, we just talked about the qualities that we've got at the back. We also talked about the options that we've got going forward. So that leads me to think that hopefully we might be able to handle them a little bit better than we did at the Kassam last season. But it also leads me to think that we can do damage. And this has been like a really big change for us. From basically last season, where you felt like a lot of it is about limiting what other teams are doing. Now I'm thinking like we're going into these games thinking like we can hurt teams at Oxford.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of their quality is at the front of the pitch. And now I just think like with the players that we've got, particularly, you know, a lot of, I think there's been a reasonable amount of squad churn there over the summer. It could be quite a similar sort of situation to the MK game in that respect. But yeah, it's a tough game. Like, they're another team who, well, I mean, look, obviously they're not in the the same conversation as maybe MK were or are in terms of that sort of top two or three teams in the league. But they're certainly that next group who will be interested in a playoff spot, I should think. So in that respect, it's a difficult game. And but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Like, I think maybe these sorts of games aren't quite the free hit they were last season. Now that we've had a year at League One level, but it's a game that we'll go into as, you know, I should think, outsiders. And yeah, I'd like to think we can do take something from it. By the way, just on George's interview there, I thought George was very, very professional. We managed to only get in one little dig about the prediction last season.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to contain myself much. I think I'd have just been like relentlessly like hammering away at the point.
Making that very, very clear, I'm sure. Is a great, very, very, very professional from George there. We clearly sent the most professional member of the team along. Something that's interesting that George says in that is just how open Carl Robinson likes to play his football and how attacking they are. I think Oxford scored the equal with champions Wigan with goals scored last year. But obviously, as you said, their quality is more at that end of the pitch than the other. And it does feel like we go there with a lot less fear, doesn't it? It feels like we go there with the genuine ability to be able to hurt them. And, you know, I think with riding a bit of a high from the opening game, maybe Oxford lost at Derby. They're obviously going to want to pick up some points, but maybe it's just going to take a moment to click. It feels like a good time to go play him. I'd fancy us for a point. I'm going to go for a 2-2. What do you reckon, Tom?
Yeah, I think that'll be goals. A Desmond seems a good shout.
Little Desmond.
I don't know. I fancy us to win, you know. I don't know why. I've just got a feeling.
We'll use one of our many options, shall we? And try and win.
We only need one option. That's a nibbler. I know. I fancy us for it. Clip this. Save it for next week's pod. And we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I don't see why not. I think it'll be, you know, a relatively decent following. From us. So obviously it was a decent game last year, and you know, in sort of enjoyable afternoon as much as it can be at that particular stadium.
It's another good point that is worth making again, that George mentions at the end of that. Anyone who's not been before, definitely there is nothing around the ground. It's miles away from anywhere. Get yourself into Oxford, book yourself a cab in advance to the ground and back afterwards, and sample a few of the nice boozers in the other university town other than ours. Let's get a score prediction from you, Tom, just to wrap things up.
2-0 the U's.
Oh, clean sheet. Okay. Okay.
I reckon Sam Smith's going to have a big part to play. I think,
yeah.
Actually, to be honest, I think Sam Smith will either score a brace or he'll get sent off.
Yeah, or both.
Yeah, or both.
Yeah. Shushing, relentlessly shushing.
A booking after each goal. I mean,
yeah. Perfect. I mean, I think strange things have happened. Thank you very much again, George. Do go check out Not the Top 20 if you don't, for all some great EFL coverage up and down the leagues. Keep yourself up to date with everything else going on with our rivals in League One. Tom, let me end on a pretty important question that Jamie sent in, which is, who would you not like to face in a fight, Jones or Digby?
Well, if I can help it, neither, to be honest.
That would be ideal.
They both absolutely batter me. neither. That's my answer. I appreciate sitting on the fence a little bit, but if I can avoid having the shit kicked out of me by Paul Digby or Lloyd Jones, I'll very much try and do that. Thanks.
I'd rather not get on the wrong side of Paul Digby myself. Anyway, let's wrap things up for this week. We've obviously spent a bit of time talking there about the Oxford game next week. There is also a game on Tuesday night, which is in the Carabao Cup at home to Millwall, the same opponents that knocked us out at the Den last year. We've not got a Millwall fan preview. These early rounds of the Cup, I suppose it's fair to say, aren't the most well-attended fixtures.
hopefully we can repeat the same feat that we did in this round last year against Swindon, and avenge that that 3-1 victory, I think, off the top of my head, at Millwall last year. So we'll see how we go there. And we'll have a little bit of reaction on that on next week's pod, which should be back to a free man pod. Do leave us a review. Do subscribe as well. Anywhere you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, Audioboom, Acast, wherever it is, Amazon, everywhere. Do leave us a little review if you can, only if it's 5-star, though, obviously, which I should hope it is. And it does. They do really, really help us. So, yeah, subscribe, like, review, please. That'd be brilliant. Share it to your mates. Just tell someone about it. Tell a Hughes fan about it. Oh, have you heard these guys every week? They might even enjoy it. You never know.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Yeah, pleasure. A pleasure as always.
I'll chat to you next week after a 2-0 comfortable victory at the Kassam.